Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today is a special treat for me as I head down to a farm to find out how they're not only transforming the way they produce food, but also supporting the community, both in their immediate environment and beyond. But before we get into that, a lot of people have been asking me, what is practical alchemy? And what is a practical alchemist anyway? Well, Practical Alchemy is a program, a system that supports transformation, enabling people to become their true empowered selves. So living in line with nature in a way that's true to their nature, as I always say at the top of the show. The Practical Alchemist models this by strengthening their physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, and energetic self. And I can guide you. So if that sounds interesting, check out thepracticalalchemist.uk or email me, jj@thepracticalalchemist.uk, to arrange a chat. Now, I talk about energy a lot on this show, and you may be skeptical, but energy sessions, what I call clearing sessions, can be very powerful. Maybe you're frustrated, angry, or scared because modern medicine just isn't giving you what you need to resolve your health challenges. That's where Safe Haven Healing comes in, offering a safe space where you can tap into your innate ability to heal in the capable hands of an experienced facilitator. You can find out more at safehavenhealing.uk. That's safehavenhealing.uk. Check it out and book a complimentary initial consultation with me. It could be transformational. Of course, one of the pillars of good health is good nutrition, good food. In recent years, factory farming methods have depleted that nutrition in what we eat, not to mention cause environmental issues and animal welfare problems. So it's good to know that some farmers are changing the way they do things, working the land in a far more eco-friendly way, all the while diversifying and supporting their local community. One such farm is Ardross, near me in Fife in Scotland. I've been a customer at the farm shop for many years now, partly because of the quality of their produce, but also because supporting local businesses is important to me. I've been wanting to feature the family-run farm on the show for a long time. And finally, Nikki Storer and I got together and sat down for a chat. Tell me about the way you farm here, because I love the ethos that you have when it comes to your farming and your business, because it's not just the farm. You've had to diversify like a lot of farms have. So you've got the farm shop and a whole load of other things going on. So first of all, tell me how you farm and how that's different to the factory farming or, you know, sort of bigger farming that we see here in the UK.
Where do I start? Well, first of all, welcome to our farm.
Thank you.
So the way that we farm has been an evolution, and it's really taken place since we started dealing direct with the consumers. So what we want to do is we want to take the best of old and new techniques, and we want to put them together and make the best way to make our farm sustainable from every point. Sustainable for our family, sustainable from the food that we produce, and sustainable from the environment and the animals. So we aren't necessarily going back to hand sewing everything. We are also using technology, but we're trying to make sure that they are all sustainable and together. And the only way that we were able to do that was because mum and dad had the foresight to start dealing direct with consumers, and it gave us breathing space from the multinationals and time to sort of step back and look at what we were doing, and also the link with the consumer, and realised that this is what they really want.
Yeah, I love the way that you are really an integral part of the community now. And I think that's really important. So let's just take a step back. I mean, you've been farming here, the family's been farming here for some time.
Yep.
But how long is it since you really started shifting things up? Maybe about 8 years, was it? How long was it?
So Mum and Dad opened the farm shop in 2005.
Was it that long ago?
It was, wow. Yeah. And time flies when you're having fun. And the reason that we opened the farm shop was because we're tenant farmers here, and making money from farming at that stage was just really difficult. Mum and Dad had two daughters at university and one about to go to university, and we either needed to get out of farming or change things.
Yeah.
So where we are at the moment is actually purely an accident, because they decided that they wanted to diversify somehow. So we had compressed straw bales in our airing cupboard to make logs for quite a long time. Dad was going to be a joiner. We were going to make the stone troughs into planters, all sorts of different ideas. And eventually Dad said, do you know what? I love farming. I think I'm really good at it. Why don't we actually sell what we produce, but do it direct? Yeah. We all thought they were completely stupid. We were in our 20s, at Glasgow, Edinburgh, Aberdeen University. Why would you go to a farm when you could go to supermarkets and have all of this amazing produce?
Oh, really? Did you think that then?
Yeah, back then, that's exactly what we thought. But Mum and Dad, thankfully, decided they were going to give it a try, and they started selling the beef direct.
Yeah.
And we were just conventional farmers at that point. We were doing things well, and our husbandry practices were really great. But it was only until we started speaking to the customers and they started asking, oh, so where are your cattle? What do you feed your cattle? Mm-hmm. Have your cattle been given antibiotics? That we actually thought, for all these years, the supermarkets, all they've told us is that they need a certain size carcass or a certain sized head of cabbage, and this is what the consumer wants. But actually what the consumer wanted was much more diverse and more complicated. A lot of people wanted organic, some people just wanted local, but at the end of the day, they really wanted a connection with their food. And that was what led us on a journey to change our farming practices, because we looked at it from a whole different viewpoint, from the end consumers rather from the primary producers. And over 18 years, we have changed everything that we do on the farm.
Yes, and everything is the better for it, I think. So let's talk about what you changed then. So I think people who aren't really aware of farming practices, I mean, they see huge machines going along in fields when they're driving out in the countryside, if they don't live in the country. And, you know, people are a bit sort of remote from what farming actually entails. A lot of it is hugely industrialized, isn't it? And there is a lot of use of pesticides, that sort of thing, antibiotics in animals. So all of that's changed for you, hasn't it?
It has, yes. We still have big tractors, but we now don't plough anymore. So the need for having four tractors in a field has been reduced to just one. We use a machine called a Claydon drill. There's lots of different variations on this machine, but it means that we go straight into the farm and into the field, and we sow directly into the previous crop. So there's no ploughing. So we still, yes, have big tractors, but we use those big tractors more wisely. We're using less diesel. We're impacting the soil a lot less because it's just one pass, and the soil structure is there. And the soil, I won't go into too much detail, but it's basically the basis of everything that we do here. Again, we still have our cattle, we still have big numbers of cattle. The way we graze them is slightly different. And instead of having cattle and sheep and getting a big carcass, what we went back to was looking at, are they good mums? If they're good mums, then they look after their calves, so we don't need to get involved. We actually changed our breed of cattle so that they're slightly smaller. So these slightly smaller cows, they give birth really easily. So we only check them twice a day when they're calving. We don't need to bring them in. But because they're giving birth on their own to a small calf, the calf is straight up on its feet, the mum's straight up on her feet, and the calf goes in to get colostrum. If you get colostrum into a calf, that's the rest of the building blocks of its immune system is started. And then all of a sudden, we don't have to input. All of a sudden, the cow is given birth on her own. There's not a C-section. She's not in pain or torn or anything. So there's no antibiotics. There's no medicines. So what my dad was very, very good at was unpicking all the problems that we've unwittingly caused by trying to make things easier and making things part of a food production chain and going back to the basics, because nature actually knows how to do all of these things.
Oh, yeah.
We've just interfered in the whole process. And it's not a quick fix by any means. Dad, 18 years it's taken, and we're still improving things. But nature knows how to put things back.
I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree with you more. And I can't believe it's been 18 years. I seem to remember when the shop opened, and it seems like only yesterday. It's fantastic to hear you talk like this. And of course, you're not really producing any less. You're still producing volume.
Yes. So we, well, having said that, we have the luxury of not dealing with the supermarkets anymore. So at one point before the shop, we were part of the biggest producers of broccoli in Europe. So instead of producing just one vegetable, we now produce 50 or 60 vegetables over a slightly smaller acreage. But the cattle numbers we've actually increased. We've brought sheep on for biodiversity and they've increased as well. So it's just different, but same volumes of different
things. Yeah, exactly. And the sheep that you've started farming as well, they're a particular breed, aren't they?
They are. Neither of our breeds of animals are particularly marketable. That's one of my jobs. So the sheep are called Easy Care, and the
great name not for a sheep. No,
but it does do exactly as it says on the tin. They are Easy Care sheep. My sister was very passionate about bringing more animals and more diversity onto the farm. So this was her project, and she did a lot of research into it. Wool, as you probably know, is a loss leader. It costs us more to shear animals than it does to sell the wool. So we went down to Wales and spoke to a farmer, and he had these Easy Care sheep, which are almost like goats. They've got hair rather than wool. And at certain times of the year, it just falls out.
Seriously?
Yep. And we thought it would be a big problem, but you see it hanging on the fences and things.
I've seen that, yeah.
And the birds love it. So actually, we have got very luxurious nests in our area full of beautiful wool. And they look a bit scruffy for a while. They've got tufts, and some of them have kind of punk rockers. And they do look strange because it falls out in clumps.
Yeah.
But they... we don't need to touch them. Again, as with the cattle, they're very, very good mothers. Lambing isn't a big ordeal. We don't do 24 hours watching them. We leave them to find a corner on their own. They don't like being watched, or as a human does, as cattle do. Let them get on with it. We're there if anything needs us, which occasionally it does. But other than that, they stay up on the hill and they look after themselves, and they bring all sorts of different benefits to the farm with their, they used to be called the golden hoof, because the grass that they walk over, they kind of rough up, and cattle obviously have different kinds of hoofs, and they have different bacterias, and they eat different grasses.
Wow, I didn't realise that about, so you don't shear them at all?
Nope, we don't touch them.
And so does that also mean that you don't have to dip them? Do you have to dip them? No.
We don't use chemicals or anything on our animals. Because they don't have wool, then they don't really get maggots. So that's not really
a problem.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Because they don't have wool, they don't, their tail doesn't get stuck to the back, so we don't dock their tails at all. So their tails are left naturally long, so then they can get rid of flies themselves. So again, we're unpicking all these problems.
Yeah. I love hearing these stories. I love hearing how you're doing this now. And what's going through my mind, of course, is why doesn't everybody do this?
I think farming has become industrialized,
yeah,
and a lot of people don't have the opportunity to, because margins are so tight that all of a sudden animals and vegetables have become numbers on a spreadsheet. And it really genuinely is because we stepped out of that rat race that we managed to change things. All of the things that farmers are doing are absolutely fine in terms of an industrialised process. And to be honest, you wouldn't be able to make money if you did it any other way, really.
So just to recap then, so your livestock are animals that can look after themselves, need the minimum care. You don't need to pump them full of antibiotics and goodness knows what chemicals. So, and they're grazing, they're out all the time. You know, there's a big health move towards grass-fed beef. And so you're doing that just naturally. I know you were saying earlier that some of your cows have had to come in because they're on heavier ground and it's got a bit boggy with all the storms that we've had and the rain. But they're still just eating silage, which is fermented grass, basically. This is all hugely healthy. Have you noticed a difference in the ecosystem of the farm?
Yes, because we have to pay great attention to what our cattle are eating.
Yeah.
So the cows, the more diverse swards that the cattle eat, the healthier the cattle are, and actually the more nutrition you get from the meat. But don't get me wrong, if you take a grain-fed cow and you decide only to feed it grass, it will probably die. It will be malnourished because for so many generations, cattle have been fed grain.
Right.
So it has taken us a long time. It took us 10 years probably of selectively breeding cattle that were doing a lot better in grass, because we've undone all the cows used to do well in grass.
Yeah.
But then I think it was after the Second World War, we had all this excess grain that they decided, mm-hmm. right, great, let's feed it to cattle. And it's like giving, I don't know, children sweeties.
Yeah.
They will eat the sweeties, they will love the sweeties, and they will grow up, but they're not necessarily healthy. And that's the same for cattle. You give them grain, they'll grow very quickly, but you're changing the dynamic, the nutritional value in it, the omega-3s, 6s and 5s, everything in it. So it's really important. I digress, but the biodiversity farm is linked to that.
No, that's very interesting. I didn't know that either about feeding grain to cattle, because, you know, I'm not a farmer. And so, yeah, so you do pay very close attention to the biodiversity on the farm, and you make very sure that what the cows and the sheep are eating is going to be good for them.
Yes, and every field that we have has at least 8 different types of grasses and herbs in it. And we're always trying to improve that. One of the most important things for the cattle and also the soil is different types of clover, because it pulls carbon, nitrogen out of the sky and fixes it into the soil.
Yeah.
But the cattle also love it as well. But we have all sorts of different sort of herbal lays throughout the grasses, and that's, they'll selectively eat them. If they're feeling ill, they'll maybe go to a different one. We've got wild garlic because we don't put chemicals on the cattle anymore, but flies don't like garlic.
No.
Cattle love garlic, so we try and put a lot of wild garlic in through them. Yep.
Who knew that? I'm loving this conversation, but I'm just noticing it's probably time to go for a quick break now. So I want to hear more about these garlic-loving cattle, after we've heard these messages from our station sponsors.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Nikki Storer from Ardross Farm here in Fife, not far away from where I live. And Nikki, I have to say, I love the idea of garlic munching cows. I really do. Now, these, by the way, for anybody not in the UK, listening from abroad, or indeed anybody in the UK, these are not Highland cattle. These are a specific breed of cattle which do not have the long hair and horns, but they do live outside all the time, don't they?
They do. We specifically chose a breed of cattle that was very hardy, that could stay outside all year long, and was also quite small compared to commercial cows, so that when it was really wet and boggy, they didn't interrupt the soil structure.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Absolutely great. So I'm already getting a feeling of how healthy the farm is. And of course, this is where our health starts. Our health starts with eating food that is healthy, that has been produced in a healthy way. And actually, it's easier in a way for you. to farm?
Yes, it means that we use the tractor less, diesel less. We don't, diesel's very expensive. We don't have to buy as much diesel anymore. But it all, as you say, it all comes down to growing healthy foods. And the fundamentals of that is that you need healthy soil, because the carrot that you're eating, the cabbage that you're eating, the cow or the steak that you're eating, that all gets nutrients from the soil. And if the soil is dead, if it's not functioning properly, then your vegetables and your meat cannot be healthy for you.
And of course, the consistent use of pesticides and the constant ploughing all disrupts the soil and causes problems going forward. So you end up using more and more fertilizers and more, you know, additives into the soil, which completely changes the nature of the soil.
Yes, my dad had a really great analogy that in the soil you've got all these worms building houses, and they built this really great house, and you plough it, and the house has been cut in two, four, and it says, right, okay, great, I'm going to have to build another house. But we've stopped ploughing, so our worms have got annexes, they've got condos, they've got swimming pools, they've got these amazing houses, and these worms are creating an infrastructure under the soil that all these mycorrhizae can then function in. And if you look across the fields, there's almost like spider webs everywhere. And that's all of these amazing bacteria and working properly, as opposed to cutting through them and letting them start this whole job again. Probably another great benefit is also water absorption with all these storms that we're getting, is that healthy soil can absorb 10 times more water than dead soil. So as a buy, not from a nutritional point of view, but from us all living in wetter times, it's really important.
And just talking about that impact on the general environment, you hear a lot of people talking about the runoff from farms where fertilizers, chemical fertilizers have been used, and that runoff isn't particularly healthy, and it gets into everywhere. It gets into the ecosystem, gets into the drainage system. Now, you presumably are not contributing to that. What comes off your farm when it's wet and rainy is pretty healthy.
I hope so.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the main problem is, yes, ultimately, I guess farmers are doing this, but when we dealt with the supermarkets, we had a huge big lever arch folder of spraying and other regimes that we had to put on them. Otherwise, we couldn't supply the supermarket. So yes, it is wrong, but the whole food system is built on this, and to get, it's so huge that the supermarket has to make sure that every single cabbage producer in the UK puts exactly the same chemicals on so that they've got a standard product.
Yeah.
So you can't make an individual decision as a farmer that actually this doesn't need a fertilizer or this doesn't need a pesticide, because you're part of this huge food system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas luckily we're digging the carrots and taking them into the shop, so we can look at the carrots and we can decide these are healthy, these are not healthy. We have a 5-year rotation because we're a slightly smaller acreage, so no one crop is grown in the same place every 5 years, so there's nutrients going back in. But when you scale that food production right up to where we are at the moment, individual decisions and assessments are gone. It's like blanket vaccinations.
Yes, exactly. And just talking about carrots, for instance, you don't wash your carrots.
No, I used to work in a vegetable factory when I was at university, and we used to wash our carrots, and the water that went down the drain was bright orange.
Oh, no.
And I always used to sit and watch it thinking, I bet you that's all the goodness that's going down the drain. Also, if you don't wash them, they keep longer.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
So it is a little bit mucky, and we do have people kind of looking at us sideways when they're picking up a carrot occasionally, especially when it's been very wet. But ultimately, you'll be able to keep that carrot for longer and hopefully have a lot more nutrition in it.
Well, they do last longer, and they taste better than many carrots that you would buy in a supermarket. And you're not certified organic.
No, we're not organic. We do have a commercial part of our farm that we do still do wheat and barley for the maltsters. And our vegetables and our cattle and everything, we try and treat as organic. We're actually Pasture for Life certified for all our animals. And the same auditor for Pasture for Life is the same organic auditor. And she says that we would pass absolutely perfectly into organic. But For silage, we have a rotation that hits one of the commercial fields and the silage is taken off that.
Right.
So that is the only part of our whole system because we have a commercial part. However, this is a work in progress and our aim is to produce as much of the food as possible and sell it direct, which doesn't necessarily involve growing barley for whiskey companies. But as everything in agriculture, we have 1 year to change things and then a whole year to wait until it happens. So we are getting there. We've made huge progress. The majority of the stuff we sell direct, but it is a slow progress.
Yeah, I remember actually having a conversation with your mum years ago about whether or not you were certified organic or would certify as an organic farm. And I think at the time it just was just too much, you know, paperwork and cost and everything else to get that certification. And it's probably not worth it.
Well, that's the thing. If we are selling to people like you who know us, who live along the road, if we tell you that we're organic, then hopefully we've built up that trust in the community that we don't need a stamp necessarily saying that we are organic. Pasture for Life, we got certified. But again, hopefully local people know that already. It just changes things when you're dealing direct with people you can actually see and talk to face to face.
It really does. And that takes me on to another aspect of what I think you're doing things in the way that we need to be moving more towards generally. And that is you are community facing and you're very aware of your place in the community. Now, maybe in the olden days, like, I don't know, a couple of centuries ago, that would have always been the case. The farm was always part of the community, but we lost that, didn't we? But what I'm hearing and what I see with you is that our Dross farm is very much at the heart of the community, but it's not just the villages around. It's part of a wider community within Scotland and the UK of farmers who want to make a difference and want to farm cleanly and healthily and support businesses, local businesses, because your shop supports a whole range of local producers and Scottish producers, but, you know, some outside local area as well. You're very aware, I think, of this supporting a community, whether that's the people who come and buy from the shop, the people who live around, or the people who produce and make things. And that's been a key part of what your plans are, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Without the community, we don't have a business. We try our very best and we've created hopefully trust between everybody so that customers can come to us. But really without the customers, without the support of other farmers, without ideas, everybody's learning. We never stop learning and we need everybody to shop with us, to work with us, to inspire us, to make this all work. And I think in many senses, this is how society is kind of broken down recently, because community is everything.
Mm.
Yeah. People are lonely. They shouldn't be. We should be part of a community. We should be trying our best to produce food that is healthy for our community, because it impacts the schools that we have around. It impacts the behaviour in children. It impacts how often you go to the dentist. It impacts the NHS. It impacts everything in your life, depression. And we're just a tiny part of a bigger community. But if we don't all work together, then we're discovering it just breaks apart. And we like being part of that community. We like helping people. We like going to mentors and friends who inspire us all over the world. And we're really lucky. But I think it's so important. We're at a, I don't know whether it's exciting or terrifying, part in our planet, and if we all don't work together to make it better, then where are we all going to end up?
A very good question. But you see, I have this notion that it's farmers like your family and local producers who are going to make the difference, and that's where it's going to be going forward. I think that you're paving the way. But let's talk a little bit more about that in a moment. Let's just take another short break now to hear some more messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today, Nikki Storer, from Ardross Farm here in the East Nuke of Fife. Look it up on a map if you don't know where that is. And Nikki, we were talking about community. And of course, one of the communities that you're part of is the whole agritourism business. And you're a part of the Agritourism Organisation for Scotland, aren't you? You're very active in that. So what's all that about?
Scottish agritourism is very exciting. So if you think about Italy, the first thing that everybody thinks about is food and agriturismos. And Scotland has come a huge way in our food. We are no longer, hopefully, known for our fried Mars bars.
Oh, we still are, I think. But, you know, I think we're getting past it.
But we're also known for an abundance of seafood and game and beef and our landscape. And farmers have very much been just farming and quite separate from tourism and the communities. But increasingly, as things have changed, farmers have looked to diversify. And there's a group of over 200 of us now in Scotland who actively want to encourage local people, international people, national tourists to come onto our farms and have an experience with us and learn how we produce food. That could be a farm shop like mine, or it could be a lambing experience. It could be staying in a pod on a loch. It could be staying in a luxurious hideaway somewhere, or it can be an event, a pumpkin patch. But all of the farmers, what we have in common is we really want people to come back onto farm and to learn how we farm and how we produce food. And I think that's really key to the future of everything. We need to bring people back onto farms, welcome them and educate them.
Yeah, I think that's great. And you did a fabulous thing the other year, which was a sunflower maze.
Yes, we did. That was the summer after COVID.
It was, I think, yeah. Yeah.
A local church approached us because there was a lot of people that were very isolated and lonely, and they wanted to bring the community together. So we had a sunflower field that we'd sowed direct drilling, which was the first time we'd ever done that. So we didn't plough it, we just sowed it straight into the stubble before. And it was a wonderful community event to be part of. People who had been isolated or living on their own, they were stewards. They took people around the maze, they welcomed people to the maze, and people came from all over Scotland.
They did, didn't they? Was it 2 days it was running? Was it just a weekend?
No, it was slightly longer than that. I can't actually remember. It was up until the point where the wind battered the sunflowers. Living in the East Nuke of Fife, the wind doesn't get much.
Yeah. The wind does get quite strong. It's pretty strong today, I have to say, when I was having a swim. I've forgotten how long it did last, but it was lovely. And it's always gorgeous seeing a field of sunflowers. That's always going to brighten everybody's day.
Yes. And we've always tried to have sunflowers just because it makes people smile. And when they're passing the farm, they think, oh, why is this farm growing sunflowers? We're not in the south of France.
Yeah,
and they pop in. So it was a really good tie up for us because we have always had sunflowers. And we took a lawnmower and drew hope as part of the maze. So from up above, hope as we were coming out of COVID for everybody. So it was a nice
message.
Fantastic.
Did you get some aerial shots of that?
We did, yes. We had a drone and we took some pictures, so it was really nice.
I thought so. I thought I remembered seeing something like that. Some really innovative things are happening within the farming communities, I think. And I love that because, again, as you're saying, this is all part of health and well-being. This is where our health and well-being start.
Yes.
And, yes, we are getting past the notion of, you know, Scotland just being about haggis and deep fried Mars bars or black pudding or whatever. These things, I'm not saying they're not good. A good haggis is a thing of joy, but we are really moving past that and into an era where we're really being known for good food. In fact, Gordon Ramsay himself once declared that your beef was the best in the country, I remember. And he did it on TV as well.
Yes, he came to visit us.
He did, yeah. So, you know, that was a pretty fine accolade.
It was, and it just goes to show you again about community, because it was one of our customers that was working on the set of Gordon, Gino and Fred that recommended us.
Oh, really?
So once again, community, who you serve, how you serve people plays a big part in it. And we still can tell where it's been replayed time and time again, because we still get more people coming over to visit us on the website. But to have a chef of that calibre come to the farm, he butchered some of our beef with our butcher. He then cooked it in an amazing meal that we were invited to.
Yes.
Was a dream come true.
It was lovely. I remember watching it with my dear old mother, and she was very excited because she always loved coming here. It just goes to show how when we pay attention, when we take care of ourselves and our environment and the way we produce our food, it really pays dividends. And not just in terms of us not filling our bodies full of chemicals, but also taste.
Yes.
Experience. And that's all part of the health thing as well.
Yes. And so many people, going back to the carrot again, I keep saying, what do you do to your carrots? Your carrots taste amazing.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it's because we have picked that carrot that morning, dug that carrot that morning, and you're then eating it.
Yes.
It's not been washed in chlorine or water. It's not been put in a plastic bag. It's not been transported halfway across the country. It's not sat in a cold store for however many X weeks and then been brought home. It's just fresh, and everybody needs to have the ability to either grow or purchase food that is fresh.
Yeah. I saw somebody, an American woman who does a lot of YouTube videos, and she did a comparison between British food and American food. And she said that when she goes back to America, she finds it very disappointing because the food doesn't taste of very much. Mm-hmm. Carrots do not taste of anything. Now, that's generalizing. And there are, I'm sure, farmers in America, like anywhere else, who produce great tasting food. But the stuff that you get in the supermarket is not always that great. And then, you know, I've heard that very often the apples that you might buy, you don't have an orchard yourselves.
We've got 6 apple trees.
That's an orchard. That's kind of an orchard. But I read somewhere that the apples that you buy in a supermarket can be up to 2 years old because they've been in storage, in cold storage for that length of time. Well, how much of their vitamins and goodness is left after that time?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. The factory that I worked in, broccoli was held for 6 weeks before it was taken out to the supermarkets. And that's why as soon as you take it home, my fridge, it melts.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and the same with getting back to carrots again, the same with carrots. You know, if you buy a bag of carrots, how long do they actually stay crisp once you've opened up the bag? Not very long. Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously people living in cities don't have the same access to farm shops like yours. However, I think you can still, in cities at farmers markets and places like that, get good food that's been produced by local producers and is a lot better than the kind of thing that you'll get in a supermarket. Now, price-wise, okay, I get it. You know, a bit more expensive because, you know, you can't do that. You can't produce that kind of food without there being an expense.
Yes.
And, of course, we know that supermarkets keep the prices unnaturally low. From my perspective, I think that it's worth spending a little bit more and eating a little bit less of something.
Yes, and it's such a hard one, especially with the cost of living. But I would agree with you. I only buy free-range chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I need to know where things are produced.
Yeah.
And I maybe only have chicken once a fortnight, once a week. And that's how it used to be. But we've got used to eating chicken for every meal. The same with beef. We try and eat a whole food diet, which does involve meat as well. But it's an addition to lots of vegetables and other things. But people's priorities, the whole of society is different now. And of course, there are people who just can't afford, sadly, food. But I think everyone should have definitely have access to it. But it is hard. we don't go on holiday because I prefer to buy better food. We have one television because I buy better food, but I'm in a position where I am able to do that. And I can't even imagine the position that people that don't have that income are in. But it's so important because it'll affect the rest of your life.
Exactly. Absolutely. And your husband farms as well, doesn't he?
He does, yes.
And I should just say as well that this is a farm, Ardross now, since your father passed away, this is a women's farm here. It's your mum and the three sisters.
Yes, we're all women. Mum's still very, very much involved. She does everything. My sister Claire is the farmer. I look after the kind of retail aspect of it. And my other sister, she actually works for the Royal Highland Education Trust, which is another very important charity, bringing children from schools all over Scotland out onto farms or farmers into classrooms. And when she doesn't do that, she gets to work on her weekends at the shop.
Yeah, she has the pleasure of working her socks off in the shop at the weekends.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's fantastic as well. So, you know, when your father it was very sudden, very sad when he passed away. You just decided, okay, well, we'll just carry on.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really a decision. We just had to get on and do it. And I think that's what looking after animals, being in the countryside, you just have to get up every day. The animals needed fed, they need to look after, the customers were still coming. And we love what we do. We really love what we do. And Dad always said, if you find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And it's absolutely true. I mean, we work all the time. Claire works 7 days a week and it's really, really busy, but I wouldn't change it. No, none of us would. And I think that's what everybody should try and aspire to in life is doing something that they enjoy. And a farm doesn't stop. So we know we wanted to do this. So we've now got a 5 foot nothing farmer with long blonde hair.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, you do a great job. And I think it's, you know, for all these reasons, the way that you farm, the fact that the four of you just carried on and said, well, we love it. I think that passion really shines through. I think you can feel it in everything that you do. I brought a friend into the shop when she was up here visiting me recently and she was blown away. She said, oh my God, it's so fantastic. Oh, you know, and she could have bought the whole shop up, I think, and she lives in London. I guess those of us who come in regularly are a bit sort of blasé about it now, but it is you've got some lovely stock in there. You've got some beautiful food. You've got your own homegrown food as well as local produce, which is absolutely beautiful, from honey to a whole host, oat cakes, whole host of things that are made locally. And for me, that's great too, because all of these local businesses need somewhere to sell. And I like to think that we are supporting the whole community by shopping with you. And you posted something recently on Instagram, I think it was, where you outlined who we're actually supporting when we shop with you. Can you just go through that again?
No,
I think it was like,
I think
you've got, I think your mother just said that you've got 17 staff, some part-time. So you're supporting 17.
Yeah. So ultimately you're supporting our family, but it's not just our family. It's not just our farm. We have 17 local people that all have families that you're supporting. And then you're supporting our producers directly. And we have over 400 small local producers there. And you're also supporting their families and their employees. But then we also buy our bags locally from a local company, and we buy ingredients and packaging and labels. We have home deliveries that go out. So there's local people that do all the deliveries for us. So it's all of a sudden, quite quickly, I was astounded. It got into its thousands of people that you are directly or indirectly supporting within a really small area, Scotland wide, but predominantly within Fife. And if you spend your pound with us, that gets distributed, which is, I hadn't realised until I sat down and did it all together.
And I think that's really fantastic. In fact, I'm getting quite emotional at the thought of it, because that to me is what it's all about. That to me is what business should be. Never mind, you know, the fact that you're a farm, But the fact that you can combine that with that wide net of support locally, I think is absolutely the way that we all need to be going forward. We need to be looking at how we do things this way. So thank you for being there.
Thank you for being our customer. That's what we always say. Without the community, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a great job, obviously. I think I've made that very clear as we've been talking just now. I think you're doing a fantastic job. And I actually sometimes envy you. I think, well, you love, you know, where better to have a farm than here on the Fife coast, where your cattle graze is right by the coast, right by the coastal path.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky. We look out the windows every day at the beautiful views. And because we're in this tiny little microclimate, it allows us to do things that if we were in the Highlands or further inland, the frost, the snow, the higher and lower temperatures, it wouldn't allow us to. It's a really special place.
Yeah, let's not forget that microclimate. I know that when people hear that I live in Scotland now, they say, oh, but isn't it freezing? No. Well, I mean, it can be quite cold. It wasn't that warm this morning when I went for a swim. But we do have a really quite special microclimate here, don't we?
Yes. And up until a couple of years ago, we were always so pleased that the Har came in as farmers because the sun didn't scorch our soils. And the wind would dry things up, and we were always milder, so we can grow potatoes earlier. And it's changing slightly, but you're right, it's very special.
It is very special. And the Har, of course, is that mist that comes in off the North Sea.
On sunny days.
On sunny days, yeah. And the sun may or may not burn it off during the day, depending.
Just think about these happy farmers, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the next time it does that, I will definitely think of you. And Nikki, thanks so much for today. It's been brilliant. And hopefully it's opened a few people's eyes to how farming can be done and how it can support a whole community. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Nikki Storer there, her passion shining through. I wonder, do you know where your food comes from and how it's produced? Do you support local growers and producers? Even if you're in a big city, farmers markets are common these days and they're a great place to talk to the people behind the food that you eat. Ask veg growers what methods they use. Are the eggs free-range or organic? Where does the meat come from? And they'll be very happy to tell you and also explain what the benefits are. But that wraps things up for today. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can listen to UK Health Radio shows on all the main podcast platforms these days. And if you like what you hear or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. So until next time, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.